This is HPR episode 2617 entitled, Exposing a Raspberry Pi Database through a REST API. It is hosted by BeEasy and is about 20 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, in this episode, I discuss how I used Python to make my speed test data available across my network.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, Hacker Public Radio fans. This is BeEasy once again. Gonna go a little different this time, a little less formal. Talk about a project I've been working on recently. It's a Raspberry Pi project. A couple of my episodes ago, I talked about using lots of Raspberry Pis to do lots of different things, mostly using them as servers. And one of the projects I still do on a regular basis is every hour on the hour, I run speed tests, CLI, and store the results of that speed test in a little SQLite database where it has just a couple fields. It has the date, the time, the upload speed, the download speed, and the URL to the PNG that is produced as a result of running that test. And the PNG is just a file that shows what the screenshot would look like if you would have went to the web interface for speed tests and the results page, what that looks like. On a separate Raspberry Pi project, my daughter has her own Raspberry Pi, and we did a project together following one of the instructions of another host to make a Raspberry Pi temperature monitor. And so my daughter and I did that together. She's six. And so we did that, and then we used Python and PySerial and some other stuff to visualize what that data looked like in our house, just looking at the temperature. So that was pretty cool. So I don't remember who the host was of that episode, but thank you for your episode on how to use a Raspberry Pi as a temperature monitor, because we followed your instructions and they work great. So thanks. Anyway, back to this show. I wanted to just go over briefly what I've done. So I've been taking this data, I've been storing it for forever in a SQLite database. And what I've had to do is I've had to either SSH into that machine and run SQL queries on that little file, or I've had to copy the file to my local computer and then either run Python or R on it to visualize what the data looks like. And that's fine, but I'm like, well, I can do one step better. I'm a web developer nowadays. I could probably develop a little app around this. And I didn't build a web interface for it, but I did build a RESTful API. Well, it's quasi-RESTful. But the idea is that I can go to a URL or a couple different URLs and get JSON data back. And the JSON data will be the speeds every hour on the hour. And just a little history. REST stands for the Representational State Transfer. And it is, as Wikipedia says, an architectural style that defines a set of constraints to be used for creating web services. And anyone who is my age or older and has been doing web development might remember SOAP web services. It's something that, it's still in use, but something that preceded REST. And there are other API or application program interfaces that exist now, but SOAP was one of the grandfathers, and it was really unwieldy. You had to deal with XML data, and the authentication was always weird, and it was always, I don't know if it had to be proprietary, but I always use it in a proprietary setting. It always seemed opaque and hard to use. And REST is more of a standard, and every SOAP interface is going to be different. And REST is a different approach. It tries to make it a standardized approach to creating an interface to share data between systems. And it uses basic HTTP methods for doing that. And those methods are get, post, put, delete, and also to a lesser extent, patch. And those are the same things that you would do in any data-driven application, which is create, read, update, or delete information. That's what CRUD stands for. And so what I decided to do was I'm like, I can probably do one of these around this application. So I can just go to my Raspberry Pi's hostname /speed/ all, and I should be able to get all the data. And then I made a couple other endpoints. One is /slow, and that will give me all the slow. And then I also did a /slow/latest, and that will give me all the latest slow. And I also did /latest, and that'll give me all, but in a certain date range. And so that's the basic idea of what I did. What the app actually looks like is it's a single file. That's the great thing about Python and about the framework that I chose to use, which is called Bottle. It's a simple interface to, I wouldn't use it in production for a big application, but I've used it to either prototype a REST API or to use as like, instead of using and testing, I've mocked out what a database for some external service is supposed to look like using it, just so that I can get real requests coming back. And I've used it internally to do a couple different things, sometimes with the front end on it, but usually just using it to make requests and making JSON come back to me. And so in this case, where is this? Oh yeah, it's there. So in this case, I'm just making a simple app, and I'm not doing a full CRUD. I'm only doing a read. So the only request that will work is a read request or a get request. And I'm just looking at the app now because it's pretty simple. And I'm just going to explain to everyone what it is and how it works. So a little architecture overview is that I'm using Python and the Bottle framework and the SQLite driver, the built-in SQLite driver for Python to query the data and send it out of the Bottle application in JSON format. And JSON format is, if you're not familiar with it, it's a semi-structured text format that is easier to read than XML. It stands for JavaScript Object Notation, something like that. But the idea is that you use squiggly lines to represent a squiggly brackets to represent an object. And inside of there, you can have different data types. Like you can have a list, which is inside of square brackets. You can have strings, which are inside of double quotes. And you can have ints and floats and stuff like that, that are just, you know, the bare numbers without the quotes around them. And it's a way of you say like, key, colon, value, comma. And that's how it's structured. And you can have a key, colon, array of values, or you can have a key, colon, and then inside there, another object with squiggly brackets, key, colon, value. And so it's a way of structuring, doing a semi-structured data format. But that's what the output is. And then to make it, let me just look at this really fast. So the whole app is only, how many lines is it? 60 lines, including all the spaces and stuff. And there's an endpoint. So I made a simple function that just serializes the data, because I'm not using an ORM or anything to do serialization. So I just made it really simple, where I have like a SQL statement that I'm always going to do a select star from speeds, which is the table name. And then I do a pattern at the end of that for a where clause. So if I'm just going to the all endpoint, that's it. Select star from speeds. If I have a slash and then something after that, I'll add a where clause to that, and it's just building on that string. And then I take all those, since I know the data structure, if this wasn't a small app that I knew the data structure for, I would say select this item and that item and this item and that item, and then serialize those individual items too. But since I know this is my database, I made it up. I just said select star, and then I just say, all right, I'm going to serialize it, which means I'm going to turn that tabular data into JSON format, where I'm going to put like date, colon, then the date, time, colon, the time, download, comma, the download speed, upload, comma, the upload speed, and link, colon, the link to the PNG. And like I said, they have a couple different endpoints, and the endpoint is where you want to send what URL you want to look up to get to the data. So slash speeds is just instructions on how to use the service. And it says, you need to, here are the endpoints that you can use: all, latest, slow, or latest slow, latest slash slow. And so then I have slash speed slash all, and that does all the data, slash speed slash slow, which says anything where the download speed is less than 10 or the upload speed is less than 5. And then latest slash an int would be, that int represents the date. So I say where the date is X many days away. So if you say slash latest slash 90, it would be the last 90 days. And then similarly, slash latest slash days slash slow would be just the latest 90 days of slow network traffic. And I'm running all that out to port 8000. That's important to understand, because then I have to use a Python module called, I don't have to use this one, but I have to use a whiskey server. In this case, I'm using MicroWhiskey to then serve that information to Nginx, which is my web server. And a whiskey server from what Wikipedia says is a web server gateway interface. And it's a simple calling convention for web servers to forward requests to web applications or frameworks, written in the Python language. And so it's similar. I think it's similar in concept. Yes, it is. It's right here. It's similar to CGI. That I think Perl uses CGI. But the idea is that Nginx expects web requests, or a web server expects requests to work a certain way. And it's not necessarily what your programming language does perfectly. So you have a translational layer to translate what your application does to what Nginx or your web server expects to do. And I'm not explaining that very well, but it's probably 80% of what I know about how whiskey servers work. So you're not missing very much based on what I know about how they work. But it's basically like a middleware between your application and your web server. And so you have to configure a web server to listen to, and you're going to use, basically make it, I guess it's considered a proxy to listen for requests coming from that port and turn those over to whatever port you're running the application from on the web server. Usually that's port 80 or port 443 if it's HTTPS. And so that's what I've done. I made a simple Nginx configuration where I say listen on port 8000 for this application and serve it through port 80 to the outside world. And the outside world in this case really just is my internal network. So that's all it does. And then I made a simple systemd service to start the application on boot. So on boot, Nginx automatically starts up because that's a part of the scripts that when you install something on, like we install Nginx on Ubuntu, which I'm using Ubuntu server ARM on this Raspberry Pi, but it'll start it up automatically. It's not the same thing for CentOS and Fedora. I think you have to enable it there, but in Debian and Ubuntu, it's automatically enabled. Pretty sure that's right. If not, don't worry about it. You can enable it if you, it's easy enough to enable the systemd service if it's not enabled when you start. And then after that, I did a similar thing for my app, which I say, go run this Whiskey app. And the Whiskey app just says how many workers I want to use to handle the requests and where the app.py file is to make the app work. And after all that, I tend to use either R or Python. And if I'm using R, I'll be using the HTTR or the JSON-lite libraries to read the requests. And if I'm using Python, I'm definitely using, I will use Eurolib if I have a requirement to not install any other software. But if I can install other software, I'll use the request module just because it's easier to understand. And from the command line, I use a tool called HTTPy. And it's also in the Python packaging repository, PyPI. But it's also installable from Debian and actually, I think it's Debian, Fedora, and Ubuntu just by saying, app install or DNF install HTTPy. And it's a nice interface it basically just wraps the request library. And on the command line, I can just say HTTP get the name of that server /speed/slow. And then hit enter and it'll do like a colorized, nice looking, output of all that data. So if I use HTTPy every day for my job. Like, I don't know what I'd do without it. People use Postman and things like that. I find those things cumbersome, but I can just go to the command line because it can do everything. You can do post requests. You can do, it has plugins, so you can do even like AWS auth or, all auth, like all these different types of authentication methods you can use directly with it. You can add your own CA certs. It's pretty powerful command line tool. So I use it every day. But yeah, and sometimes I'll just use that and another command line utility called JQ, which is a way to parse JSON data on the command line. So I'll just go HTTPy this thing, pipe that into JQ, and then look for this thing. And, that's just a little bit of how I like to hack around on my computer. A lot of these things are across a lot of these tools that I use in my job now. And the way of thinking is the most important part. And that is find out the most simple way to do something and do it that way first. And then, it's important to understand your requirements and gather all the information. But, there's a guy who has probably my favorite, URL for any website ever. And it's simple is better than complex.com. And I think that is the best, thing in the world to say. So that's how I build applications. And sometimes they get really complicated, but they didn't start that way. Simple is better than complex.com. There it is. Yeah. And they do Python tutorials. If you have any, if anyone has any requests for me to go further into either Python or web frameworks in Python, or even if you have questions about how to make the same application in Go, which I could probably do, or want to know anything more about how HTTP requests work, let me know, and I'll might do an episode on that too, if there's interest in it. One other side note is, if anyone has any, I'm planning on writing this talk that I'm supposed to be giving in the next 6 months about data-driven web development for medical laboratories and life sciences, because that's what I've been doing for the last, 15 years, and how to do it using open source software and how to do it from scratch. And so I want to give the talk here first. So if you don't hear, I'll be doing other episodes on Hacker Public Radio, but if you don't hear in the next couple of months an episode from me about this topic, please shoot me a line and say, I thought you said you're going to do this, and hold me accountable to do that, because I want to deliver to you guys first. So thanks for being a great audience. I love the feedback that I've been getting from both the in the show notes and the show comments, and also in the monthly roundup. So continue to keep responding. And everyone, I implore you once again, I know it's summertime and people have other things to do, but get on there and do an episode yourself, submit it. And as always, keep hacking.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.